Biomass security breach.
Warning, alien presence detected.
I got signals, I got readings in front and behind.
Welcome to Toronto Lives, a medium-sized monsters podcast where the hosts truly want to know what happened to Jonesy. Where did Jonesy go? He was such a big, important part of the first movie, and he's not in this one at all. I just want to know he's okay.
Where did Jonesy go? That is the question.
Where is my cat? where has my little cat gone?
And welcome to us finally discussing Aliens.
Oh, God.
You would think that we would have discussed this before because, you know, we're on episode 426 here. So, you know, we've been around for a while and we use alien sounds all in our intro. But
it's a good movie, guys. And we were waiting. We were waiting because, you know, you can't just start with your best stuff. That would be like a giant monsters podcast starting with Godzilla. That would be crazy.
Can you imagine?
Oh my God.
But of course, as we always do before we start talking about the movie we are discussing, we do have some news.
Well, for starters, I'm Marissa.
Oh yeah, and I'm Kyle, by the way.
Yeah, it's always us, so.
It's always us. It's just the two of us.
You should know this by now.
But yeah, we have some news. Not much. There are, as you all know, there are a lot of movie delays going on. So we have no idea when we're going to see Quiet Place 2. No idea when we're going to see that movie Antlers that we were really excited to possibly cover on the podcast. We don't know anything about when all the movies are coming out. Kind of ruins our special intermissions that we do for the brand new movies that come out, you know?
Yeah, it's rough, man. It's really rough. It's going to be especially rough having to go through all the medium-sized monster movies that we have yet to cover, knowing that 95% of them are just about people being the real monsters, as we all know. And I'll stay on this soapbox until I die.
Yes, Marissa's famous Toronto soapbox.
The real medium-sized monster is man. However, we will not be covering the most dangerous game on this podcast. I reiterate, for probably the 1400th time, we will not be covering the most dangerous game because I disagree. The most dangerous game is not men. It is clearly xenomorphs.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, we're pretty much on standby for all of our special intermissions. Hopefully, we'll eventually get some of those movies by the end of the year. As everybody knows, you know, you got to stay home and stay safe during these trying times.
Very trying times from this unnamed virus. Very strange.
Yes, very strange virus that has hit the United States very hard.
Very hard.
President Hillary Clinton's trying her best.
She really is. And you know what? I just have to say, loved the pantsuit in the last State of the Union.
There you go. Yeah.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Green makes her eyes pop.
There you go.
Also makes her skin look more yellow, but the eyes, they're popping.
That's just the lizard person underneath
the skin. The real medium-sized monster are the lizard people that live underneath us.
Oh, boy. The other really big piece of news is a demo for the upcoming Predator game has come out, Predator Hunting Grounds. I got a chance to play two matches, because it was so broken, as far as the matchmaking was concerned. I sat in queues for about 40 minutes each time I tried to play a match.
That's an exaggeration. The first time it was 15, the second time it was 6.
But then I got and then I was in there for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it kicked me back out, and then I was still waiting again.
Fair enough.
But the first round I played as the Predator. It's very unbalanced. It's very, very unbalanced right now. The Predator is very strong on the ground melee, But the plasma caster, completely underpowered. Like I shot a guy like three times and he still didn't die. And so it's unbalanced right now. The gameplay is okay, but I've heard that playing as the humans, which I didn't get a chance to do, is kind of broken as well. Sometimes you can see the predator perfectly. Other times you can't see the predator at all. And it's not consistent. It's like the predator is doing the exact same thing. Like he's crouched on the ground right in front of the Marines. And sometimes he's very visible and other times he's not. And the times he's not is when he's moving, which is when he should be visible. Cause if he's creeping around, like you should be able to see him.
Even when he's cloaked.
Yeah.
Are you saying you should be able to see the distortion?
Right. You should see the distortion, especially if he's moving around. And like, a big part of his gameplay is jumping around in the trees. So it's just very strange that like they didn't really think about that. Like, especially cause you can just look at the movies to tell what you should do for the cloaking mechanic. Like it's very simple. They did put the fact that if you walk through water, your cloaking messes up, which was nice. But, I mean, overall, it's not bad. It's just, it's not going to have multiplayer or it's only multiplayer and it's not going to have single player. So, I wonder about the longevity of it. Like, is it going to have the staying power of other multiplayer games, even though it's the Predator name?
I mean, to be fair, the Friday the 13th game that these developers are known for is still being played rather hardcore. People have a lot of fun with it. I think the issue here is the Predator has so many abilities that had to be accounted for while creating this, you know, stalker gameplay. That's going to be tough for a team who used, you know, Jason Voorhees. Jason Voorhees, one of our favorite medium-sized monsters. He can't cloak.
Yeah.
Can't jump and run through trees that we know of.
No, he's the slow, methodical.
Slow and methodical. And his only weapon is really a machete in his bare hands.
And, yeah, whatever's around him. Like, he'll shove people into nails. And
crowbars.
Yeah.
You know, chainsaws, probably, if he got the chance.
Yeah.
So, it's just a little different. We're working with a character who's known to cloak, who's got infrared vision. So, for the Predator himself, switching through vision types is a little hard. And is another aspect.
Yeah, there's only the one. There's only the one in the game.
It's another aspect of gameplay that they need to look at. But I think it's just going to take a little debugging. Right now, matchmaking was the biggest issue.
Mm-hmm.
And possibly once they get the server issues figured out, more people can play. More people can submit the real issues with the beta itself.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be able to fix those issues pretty quickly, I think.
Yeah, it's just because it's a full price game. Mm-hmm. I think that's another reason why I'm kind of like, a little like, is it gonna, like, because you're selling it on the multiplayer, so the multiplayer has to be like solid. Like there can't be any matchmaking issues and stuff like that because people are going to be pissed they spent $60 in a game that's broken.
I spent $60 to wait in a queue for 45 minutes.
Right, exactly. So, you know,
it's like going to a theme park.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, it's, I don't know. It was fun. I'll keep my eye on it. I don't think I'm going to buy it like when it comes out or anything like that. And maybe it'll drop down in price and I might pick it up. Especially if one of my friends picks it up or something like that. Maybe
is it available on PC?
Yes. PS4, PC.
You should definitely look into trying it out on PC.
Yeah.
Is the beta available on PC as well?
It is going to end tonight.
So. Oh, was the beta available on PC as well?
Yes.
Well, should have tried that out and seen
probably
if it was any better.
Probably should have tried it out.
Oh, well.
But anyway.
Let's move on.
Yeah, those are really the biggest pieces of news. There is still random rumblings of alien stuff in the works. There's also a possibility of a Cloverfield movie. We don't know if it's going to be the large Cloverfield monster or, of course, the movie that we actually covered, which is 10 Cloverfield, which was the aliens. Could be either or, could be both. We don't know. But that's pretty much it for news. Short news week this week.
Very unfortunate. Definitely due to the, again, unnamed, unknown virus spreading throughout our ranks. We apologize for any delays in getting this episode out to you. Internet service providers have been slowing down speeds.
Yes.
In order to keep up with the number of people staying at home in order to lessen the spread of the virus. And we hope you have no problems listening to this episode once it comes out.
Yes.
We're very happy to be covering, finally, aliens.
Yes. So we're going to take our usual short bump break, and we will be back to start our discussion on aliens.
Ba-da-bump, ba-dum-bump, bump!
I'll be back.
Get away from her, you.
We're back. Toronto Lives is here, finally ready to cover James Cameron's I Wish award-winning Aliens.
It's won some awards. Not like
the awards.
Not the awards, but it's won some awards.
It's won a Tony, you know, the musical production of Aliens.
I'm actually trying to look on IMDb to see if it's actually what it has won. But anyway,
Kyle's going to take us through the plot. Hopefully, he'll hit every single important point.
I will try my best. I've only seen this movie a billion times.
100 billion times.
So, start us off.
We open on space. Go ahead.
So, this is 57 years have passed since the original Alien. Ripley has been floating in space in cryostasis. She is found by some scavengers. And they take her back to Gateway Station above Earth, where she finds out that her daughter, who was 11 years old in the first Alien, is now passed away from the indeterminate disease. And if you consider isolation canon, like, she probably didn't die at the age they said she did. But, well, that's a whole other conversation. So she gets back, and she's brought in by the company, now named Weyland-Yutani. We know that's the actual name now. And they are basically interrogating her about what happened on the Nostromo. She blew up the ship. So as far as they're concerned, she just literally just blew up the ship for no reason and abandoned ship.
It's just property damage at this point.
Yeah. Of course, everybody is reported as being dead. And she is very adamant that, you know, they need to send another group to LV-426 to wipe out the species that's there. And of course the company says, why would we need to do that? We've had colonists there for like 6 years. Like, they haven't ever reported anything. And of course Ripley freaks out because they say families as well, which means there are kids. If you're watching the special edition, let's cut back to LV-426. You see Newt and her family are out in the wastelands of LV-426.
And apparently Newt's dad is a thief.
Yeah, well, yeah, they claim if there's like wreckage, just kind of like the salvage crew at the beginning of the movie, if they claim wreckage, it's theirs to sell or something like that. But anyway, they stumble upon the derelict spacecraft, and of course her father gets face-hugged. And that's all we see.
Now, can you explain face hugging to me?
You know, in case you have been asleep for 30 years. Yes. So we will describe them in creature design. But there are these like spider hand things.
Crustacean
looking things. They literally have like five fingers on the sides. Her four fingers on the sides, and they jump out of eggs usually and go on your face, implants an egg inside you, chest burst, xenomorph, queen possibly, and there you go, there's the life cycle.
Well, you went a little further than I needed.
Well, I'm about to go all the way through it anyway.
Just keep going.
So all contact is lost with LV-426. So the company reaches back out to Ripley as well as the Marine Corps, the Space Marines.
Space Marines!
They say, hey, we need your expertise because we're going to go figure out what's on LV-426. You're the only one who's ever been there outside the colonists. You have experience with these possible life forms that may exist, even though nobody believes her still. And she says no at first. And they convince her, or basically she has another nightmare in the middle of the night, thinking, you know, that she's got chest bursted because it's super traumatizing what happened to her the first movie. And she goes. She decides to go with them. So now we get to the point where we meet all of our main characters. Oh, and also Jonesy gets left behind on Earth.
Jonesy, no! I mean, at least you're safe.
Yeah, he's safe. The only concern I've always had is like, who goes to check on Jonesy?
Yeah, does he just get left in her apartment? Does she leave her with?
Left her with a neighbor. Like, hey, go check on my cat, and then Ripley doesn't come home for ever, and I'm sure someone goes and actually takes care of the cat. But
the neighbor's just like, I guess this is my cat now.
I guess I have a cat now. Anyway, so now they're on the Sulaco, the spaceship. You meet all of our crazy marine people, which we'll talk about in characters. And they are on their way to LV-426. No one believes her. You know, she tells them about the life cycle. She says it's, you know, one alien wiped out her entire ship. And, you know, like, basically bringing up the fact that, like, there were so many eggs down in that, like, hovel. And there's so many colonists. If we're going up against that many aliens, we're in trouble. And all the Marines are like, ah, we're badasses. We're so cool. They're going to regret those words later. They arrive on Hadley's Hope, a.k.a. LV-426's colony. They get there. They can't find anybody. It's destroyed. You see wreckage. You see, like, barricades. You see
pieces of metal that are on fire in the middle of the road.
Yeah. And like, the ceiling and the floors are melted from clearly where a xenomorph, like, died and fell through the floor. There's a couple of fake outs with like fun little like, oh, there's hamsters in this like this room that caused the motion trackers to go off. And so they find Newt, the only survivor at Hadley's Hope. She basically survived by hiding in the vents and staying out of sight.
Which is funny because the xenomorphs like to hide in the vents and stay out of sight.
Well, it seems the damage in the hallways makes it seem like it was like a really big battle against the xenomorphs. So I guess like it wasn't like a sneaking situation. It wasn't a sneaking mission, Snake. It was a blow everything up, Snake.
Nobody tried to get off the damn colony. Nobody tried to leave. There was no signs, or at least they don't mention any signs of attempted communication. Or,
I mean, if somebody did, there's a possibility of a xenomorph hiding in a spaceship somewhere.
Or Weyland-Yutani covering it up.
That's probably more likely. Anyway, so they find Newt. She tells them, like, everybody's gone. They find all the signals because all the people at the colony have tracking chips in them because they're company people, so they have ways to track them.
Modern day slavery, I'm telling you.
Yeah, pretty much. Or future slavery, technically.
Modern future slavery, I'm telling you.
So they find all of them. They go in. It's an alien nest. Almost all the Marines die. I think there's only four. One, two, three, four. Yeah, four.
We're going to say four and a half.
Four. If there's four left that were in the nest, there's one that got knocked out inside the APC. So they go back, and now they realize, oh, crap, things are going really bad. We need to get out of here. They try and take the dropship they came down on. It gets blown up because an alien's on the ship. Boom, explosion. then they realize, oh, crap, the processing plant, the thing that does the terraforming, is now about to explode because whenever they were firing inside the where the aliens were,
like, they, idiots, and they were told not to.
Exactly. They clipped like a cooling tank, and the crash of the dropship also caused crazy stuff. So now it's going to explode in like 4 hours. They were hoping that they could like barricade themselves and wait for rescue, but now they've only got four hours left. Burke, who we'll talk about, the jerk company man, attempts to impregnate Ripley and Newt with alien embryos and try to like study them with Weyland-Yutani, you know, wanting to know what these things are and use them as weapons, probably.
You know, on the one hand, dick move. On the other hand, he was very optimistic that they were going to get off this rock.
He was. He really was.
He was like, yeah, I'm going to get them with these alien embryos. We're going to get home safe. Then they're going to, I guess, chest burst or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'll have an alien to study. And it's like, you know what? I like that this man kept a positive attitude.
Well, he was also planning on killing all the Marines, too, to use their cryopods.
From the get-go.
Yep. of course, he gets found out, but right as he gets found out and they're about to deal with him, the power suddenly turns off. The aliens get into the med bay where they're at. Chaos ensues. Most of the other Marines die. It's now Hicks, Ripley, and Newt are the only three left, and Bishop, the android.
Bishop wasn't even there at the time. Wasn't he still out there trying to...
Yeah, he crawled through a little vent to get the Sulaco to send another dropship down so they could leave. Newt gets taken by an alien, and Ripley is like, I'm not leaving without her. Hicks gets injured. She tells Bishop, we're going to where this tracker that she has on her is. The entire movie, they've been hinting at that there's some sort of new alien life cycle thing that they haven't seen before. So that's exactly what she runs into. She goes down into the processing plant as it's about to explode, gets down there, runs into the alien queen. Queenie is not happy that a human wandered into the nest, especially is not happy when Ripley decides to blow it all up. And
torch all the eggs.
Yeah, torch all the eggs, throw grenades into her egg sack. Yeah, it's bad times. Anyway, so the queen chases her. She gets out. Bishop takes him back to the ship. Queen is there, rips Bishop in half. Big battle with the power loader that you've probably seen clips from your entire life is there. In fact, the famous quote is there as well.
Get away from her, you bitch.
And Ripley sends the queen out the airlock, and they go back into cryosleep, and they're all going to be a happy family in the next movie, right? That's how it's going to work.
That's, you know, I have high hopes for the next movie. I'm pretty sure... It's just going to be like a nice little picnic on Earth. Ripley and Hicks are going to get married. They're going to adopt Newt. It's going to be great. Pop quiz. This is not a pop quiz.
Pop quiz, hot shot.
Survey time. So, Kyle.
Yep.
I want you to name your favorite parody of Aliens.
Of Aliens?
Yes.
Oh,
specifically Aliens.
Whew. That's rough. Because the one that keeps popping into my head is not Aliens.
It's Spaceballs, isn't it?
It's Spaceballs, Alien. Because they got John Hurt back to be the to be the guy who gets his chest burst again.
Oh,
is John Hurt? I might have said that wrong. Anyway, point is.
You know what? Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. That's okay. I'll take it.
Yeah, you go. Do you have one?
Yes. It's from Bob's Burgers.
Oh.
And it's the play Freaky Fried Aliens.
That's right. That's right.
Ripley and the alien queen switch bodies and have to live each other's lives for a day and learn to appreciate each other. It's great. It's really great. If you haven't watched that episode of Bob's Burgers, you might want to seek it out after you listen to this, because it's gotta give them props.
I don't have one on the top of my head, but there are tons of parodies of
Conker's
Aliens.
Bad Fur Day.
Oh shit, that's a good one.
Literally the final boss.
That one is a good one, but it's not a queen though.
No, it's just
it's
a
just
Zeno.
Normal Zeno. It's very large. It's a big old Zeno.
Well, it popped out of a giant Panther King. So,
excuse me. I did find the awards. It did win two Oscars, Best Effects and Sound Effects Editing.
So I can say
Oscar-winning,
Academy Award-winning Aliens.
Yeah.
Why is that not on any of the Blu-ray cases?
I feel like it's just such a popular enough movie that people don't need to put the thing on it.
I mean, I'm glad that a good movie won. An Academy Award, because could you imagine if, you know, a trash movie like fucking Suicide Squad or something had won an Academy Award? Oh my gosh.
All right. So, let's go through the characters.
From the top.
So we've got
Lieutenant Sergeant Ellen Ripley.
Lieutenant. It's just Lieutenant.
Oh, well, you know what? I gave her an upgrade. Lieutenant Sergeant Ellen Ripley. She is the only survivor of the Nostromo incident, and she is played by Academy Award winning actress Sigourney Weaver.
Do I have to like fact check you every time?
Yeah,
you say
might want to fact check me on that one.
I know she's been nominated.
She's won something.
No, she hasn't. She's been nominated for three. She's never won.
Okay, Academy. It's time you and I had a talk. So Sigourney Weaver is a fucking national treasure. And if you don't give her an award soon, I'm coming for you. I should just stop saying Academy Award winning and just start saying Tony Award winning. Because nobody's going to check that.
So, so, like you said, she's the returning character for the first movie. She's the only one that returns because everybody else is dead.
Other than the cat.
Other than Jonesy. So she was a warrant officer in the previous film. And now she's a lieutenant because she gets reinstated into the
company.
Company something. I don't.
Why does the company act like a military organization? I don't
remember. And I might actually get called out on Lieutenant Ellen Ripley, but that sounds right.
I'm saying Lieutenant Sergeant Admiral Ellen Ripley, 5 stars.
Her rank doesn't matter. Her rank doesn't really matter. So she, like I said in the plot breakdown, she definitely has like PTSD from. Oh, yeah. The previous incident, and who wouldn't? But as her character grows in this movie, especially in the director's cut, since they have the daughter connection of her daughter dying in the beginning of the movie and leading into her relationship with Newt, you really get to see her become like this badass mom, essentially. And she really, I mean, she used a flamethrower briefly in the previous film, but she wasn't like, you know, the badass character. This is definitely the movie that she becomes the stereotypical, almost badass female character mm-hmm. that everyone tries to replicate nowadays, and no one can do it. But
you know what? Sigourney Weaver was the original, and she will never be outmatched.
Yeah.
It's always going to be her. I think one of the most interesting things about her character development in this movie is, like, as you said, after that second nightmare, I think it was the second nightmare anyhow,
yeah.
when she decides, yeah, I'm going, she has this resolve of literally, like, she has made up her mind that if it's nothing, it's nothing, and she's going to let it go. But if it's the aliens again, she's not leaving that place without killing all
destroying
of them.
Destroying them all. Yeah. Because, mm-hmm. yeah, that's a big moment where... between her and Hicks, where she's saying that they need to go nuke it, and Burke is just like, no, you don't have the authority to do that. And she turns and's like, Hicks, you're actually the one that's in charge now because everybody else is dead. And Hicks is like, guess we're gonna go into the orbit and nuke them all to hell.
He's like, you know what, you're right, I am in charge and we're nuking it.
Their dynamic is really fun. We'll talk more about it when we get to Hicks.
Hicks has like 12 lines in this entire movie.
That's not true. Come on.
12 lines.
That's not true.
All right. Who's next?
So next on the list, I guess, would be Newt. Before we get all to all the Marines.
So Newt is the little girl. She's a little blonde girl. Yes. Very dirty. Very just a dirty,
all times.
grimy little girl. Living in garbage.
Yep.
I don't know what she's been eating since
garbage.
The attack. Garbage.
I mean, leftover stuff, yeah.
Maybe those hamsters were actually her lunch.
There was that donut on one of the desks that was all soggy because of the water.
Gross.
But,
yeah. I'm sure the refrigerators were still working.
Yeah.
The place didn't not have power for that long.
Until the aliens got rid of the power. So she is played by Carrie Henn, who never went on to act in anything else. She became a elementary school teacher, I believe.
I thought you were about to say ophthalmologist
reason. No, she became a school teacher. Kids in movies can be pretty annoying. I like her character in this. I love her relationship with... Okay, so we're going to get to Hudson eventually, which is Bill Paxton's character. But... her relationship with him is a lot of fun because it starts off him. He's a bit really annoyed of her, but then like they kind of hit a fun repertoire with each other, like where she like keeps repeating things that he says and stuff like that. I don't know. But her character is really the bridge between Ripley and Hicks. And essentially they're like the surrogate father and surrogate father and mother of, not surrogate. That's the wrong word. Is that the wrong word? You know what I'm trying to say, right? They're the
supplementary
father and mother for Newt.
Yeah, surrogate sounds...
Surrogate's wrong.
It might be correct, but it just sounds weird in this case.
But that's, yeah, they become basically her father and mother.
Yeah, they're the replacement.
Yeah. But she's also not the stereotypical, like, I'm going to be the weak, like, person that always, like, gets in trouble or anything like that.
She's definitely not the Mary Jane Watson of this
no.
movie. No, she does not. She gets kidnapped the one time, but other than that, she was the one kind of letting everyone know. They mostly come at night, mostly.
She was, like, when in the big face hugger attack.
I heard faced humper.
Humper, which, either, I mean.
That works, too.
In that big sequence, she does, like, she is kind of a badass. She, like, holds, like, a tray against the facehugger as it's trying to get up to her, and she's like, ah!
Yep. And we're talking about, like, probably, what, a 9-year-old girl?
Yeah, she's, like,
she's
9.
She's not supposed to
no.
be very old. And handling the situation really
fairly well.
Well,
yeah.
I love, my favorite line from her is when she's asked, where is everyone? And she just screams, they're dead. They're dead. Okay. Are you happy? Can I go now? It's like relatable.
Yeah. So now these are all the characters that are the Marines and the characters that are adjacent to the Marines. Cause Burke is not first, but
I feel like we should only talk about the important ones.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there's a bunch that aren't important, but
yeah, there's like 4 important Marines.
There's like 5, but we'll go down the list here.
Marines.
But some of them will only have like 2 cents to say about them. So first, you've got Corporal Hicks. So Hicks, first of all, little Toronto tidbit, is Michael Biehn, the actor who plays Corporal Hicks, who previously worked with James Cameron on Terminator. Was not originally cast for the role. So all the other Marines trained with one of the Sergeant Apone, who is an actual Marine, which I'll talk a good tidbit about him later. But they all got like months of training with him. Hicks was brought in, and Michael Biehn was brought in to play Hicks like 3 weeks before shooting.
Oh, geez.
And like, got like a crash course, but like did not, like, he didn't have any of the interaction with some of the other Marines, so that's why sometimes he seems a little standoffish from the others, because he really, he didn't get the hardcore training and the like the group mentality that you get when you train to be a Marine.
And that's so real. Like, could you imagine, this is your unit and you guys are ride or die for each other, and then in comes a transfer with a higher rank.
Yeah.
And he's just like, hey guys, I'm Hicks. And then he's like, well, fuck you, Hicks.
Which is hilarious, because there is actually a character later on that we're going to talk about who is supposed to be that character.
It's true.
Hicks, he's, like I said, he's not, I wouldn't say he's devoid of personality. I would just say he's kind of stereotypical, like, quiet action guy.
He spends a lot of time sleeping.
Yeah. Somebody wake up Hicks. I love it. Okay, I love that part so much, because it's the drop ship as they're going down and everybody's like freaking out because it's so crazy, and he just fell asleep in the chair.
Yeah, that's how used to it he is.
Yeah. I mean, as we said, he has a nice relationship with Ripley. He's kind of the one who also shows Ripley how to use the pulse rifle. There's a nice dynamic. It's not like, I think one of the things I like about it is it's not over the top romantic. Like, they don't kiss. There's no like super romantic moment. Like, but
I don't think there's honestly anything romantic about their relationship in this movie.
It's a little there.
You can say that, but I think it's only there if you're looking for it. If you're watching this movie upon first go,
yeah,
and you go, oh, it's an action movie, of course you're gonna think main character chick and main character guy are gonna kiss in the end. And it's like, well, no, actually this isn't the Matrix. They're not gonna do that. So it's nice to know that there's actually no expectation for romance between the two of them. Now in the sequel, I guarantee you there's going to be something where they are in a relationship together.
Absolutely.
And maybe they're fighting over how to properly raise Newt. I don't know. I'm just hoping we get a few more lines from Hicks.
No, I mean, I think I think you're right. Yeah, you're definitely right. Like, I think the biggest thing is you do expect it to be that relationship, because that's what it always is. But I think with this one, like, it's more of a feeling, I guess, you get from the characters, because, like, you know, there's the scene where Hicks gives her the tracker so that he can keep track of where she's at in case she gets taken. There's the scene with them telling each other their actual first names, because, you know.
What is Hicks' first name?
Dwayne? Dwayne Hicks? Sounds right.
I don't know.
I don't remember. If my best buddy Julio listens, he's going to be pissed.
Duncan? Dunkaroos?
Anyway.
Dunkaroos Hicks?
Yep, Dwayne. I found it. It was Dwayne.
Oh, I'm so proud of you. Right. So happy you remembered.
But anyway, there's a couple moments like that where there's definitely some, I wouldn't call it romantic tension, but just there's some sort of, they like each other at least a little bit. As people, maybe it's romantic. Doesn't really matter. That's the thing I would say about it. Like you said, if there is any romantic feelings between the two of them, it doesn't matter. It's not brought into the story, which makes it like you can kind of look into it the way you want to look into it.
They left it open for your fan fictions.
Pretty much, yeah.
They didn't want to give anything away. Maybe you really wanted Ripley to end up with Bishop. We don't know.
So next up is the sleazeball company worker, Burke.
What can we say about Burke? Well, he's a little weasel.
Yes.
In a suit. The entire freaking time.
No, he wears that stupid vest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He reminds me so much of Gennaro from Jurassic Park.
Except Gennaro's not a company man.
No. He's an accountant, right?
Yes. Yeah.
He is an accountant. Or is he a lawyer?
He's a lawyer. Yeah.
So technically a company man.
Yeah, I suppose.
But you know how he wears the little like safari gear when they... It's like, okay, dude.
Chill.
Clearly, you don't know anything about this.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's... He's the weaselly, like... You know he's going to betray everybody from the beginning. Like, you can just tell by the way he is, the way he talks. Like, you want... Like, to a certain level, you want to believe, like, maybe he's not a bad guy. But then, like, the more you hear him talk about LV-426, especially when they are first leaving, there's a lot of things that he says that you're just like, as a listener, as a watcher, you're just kind of like,
he's so desperate for either everything to be perfectly okay or for there to actually be something wrong.
Yeah. And he
wants it to be what Ripley suspects.
Yeah.
And so that's creepy. Also, keep in mind, he kind of talked Ripley into joining the mission by convincing her that the company would give her her pilot's license back instead of her suspended license. Like, she could have her class A license back, which right now she's on like a class D that says she can only use like freight equipment or some crap like that. So it's he's definitely a man who's used to twisting words around, getting people to do what he wants, and also not being in harm's way.
Yeah, so he's the one that, as we said earlier, he tries to betray everybody and get the alien back to the company. And then he does get his comeuppance and dies. Funny factoid, deleted scene that you can actually see in the movie, both the director's and the normal cut. So you don't actually see him die, but there is a very specific explosion in the escape sequence from the Queen where Ripley and Newt are running away, where you can see a grenade explosion. Like, it looks different than every other explosion that's happening in the thing. And what it's supposed to be is Newt and Ripley were supposed to run into him cocooned, and he already had an alien inside of him, and Ripley gives him a grenade to kill himself as they leave. But they cut that. But you can still see that they just kept the shot that they already filmed with the explosion, because they're like, who's going to know? But it's very, like, if you're looking for it, it's very clear that it's not the factory exploding.
Why do you think they cut that scene out? I don't think it was for time. That's what, like, a 2-minute scene?
No, because that's the thing. Even in the director's cut, they added in pretty much everything else. So I feel like maybe they just didn't want to give him his nice death. Like, because he is kind of the villain character. Like, they wanted him just to be killed by the alien and that's it. Giving him the bomb death is kind of, because it also replicates another couple of characters' deaths earlier, where Vasquez shoots the pistol at the alien and then Gorman and her blow themselves up.
Yep.
So,
spoilers for some characters we're about to talk
yes.
about.
So next is the ever great Lance Henriksen as Bishop.
Oh, Mr. Yes. Henriksen.
He is fantastic. I love Bishop so much. Okay. So in the first film, you had Ash, who was the android for the company. That,
can I just say, Ash was really freaking creepy.
Yeah, very,
from
very creepy.
Get-go. He's like 5'6", wearing a jumpsuit. Just something wrong with this guy.
He's also Bilbo Baggins.
Oh my God, you're right. Oh, that changes everything. In a worse way. It doesn't make it better. Way, it makes it worse. Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, no. So Ash was definitely played off as very... At the beginning of the movie, before you know, like, yeah, you're right. As a person, you're kind of like, oh, he's a weird, like, short, kind of creepy person. But you don't know that he's an android. That's the whole play in the original Alien, is you don't know that he's an android till he starts bleeding white. And then he starts going crazy and killing Ripley, try to kill Ripley. But in this movie, they kind of threw the script a little bit. But they also kind of leave it a little ambiguous, because now you're expecting the android to be evil. You're expecting Bishop to be the villain. And there's several scenes at the beginning with Bishop that you kind of maybe think that he is still a little weird. Cause he's doing a autopsy on a facehugger later on. And like, he just kind of gives this vacant stare to this Marine that comes in, and Lance Henriksen's kind of a creepy looking dude in general.
He definitely has serial killer face.
Yeah. He's played a serial killer in a bunch of movies.
Oh, jeez.
So. But yeah, so it's really cool to like later on you get the real big turn of him of like, no, he's a good guy. Like he saves Ripley and Newt. Like he comes back for them after taking Hicks to the ship because Hicks needed medical attention as fast as possible. Like there's a lot of like really fun flip the script on that. And like Ripley learning to trust him throughout the film. That's kind of the character arcs with the two of them.
Yeah. And so when he gets stabbed through his core by an alien queen, and ripped in half, you really hurt for him.
Yeah.
And you can see the terror and just distress in Ellen Ripley's face.
Yep. And then he saves Newt from falling out the airlock.
Yeah. With like two fingers. Yep. He's just like grasping on with two fingers. He's holding her hand. He's gripping her to his chest, because that's all he is just a chest.
And a very special effects funny moment, because he... So it's... Okay. So how they did the effect is him... Like, you know, it's Lance Henriksen underneath the grating with just his upper half, like,
just, like, folded over.
Yeah, like he's on, like, a table, so, like, that's how he's laying. But when he reaches for Newt, he had to reach further than he thought. So, like, his actual body torso that's underneath all the guts, like, comes up from under the grate as he reaches for her. It's very funny.
So, if you look hard enough, you can see it.
It's, yeah, now that I've said it. You know, it's kind of like in Jurassic Park, if you notice the Dilophosaurus, when he frills out, there's a string that pulls it. And once you know that, you will see it every single time.
So now I'm going to see Lance Henriksen's midriff every single time.
Every single time.
Nice.
But yeah, I really like Bishop's character. I think that he plays off that, like, they made him look standoffish and like he could be evil at the beginning, and then like it's completely flipped the instant everything goes wrong after the alien hive attack. You know that he's a decent guy. You don't know if he's a great guy, but
now walk me through one of the theories out there about the idea that he might have put some eggs on the ship.
So I don't like this theory. I really don't like this theory, because it really goes against kind
everything
of his character.
We've seen, yeah.
Yeah. One of the biggest theories is, as we've been joking about Alien 3 so much, at the beginning of the movie, there are eggs on the Sulaco. They hatch, they cause a fire on the ship, and it launches them, and everybody dies except for Ripley. But one of the theories is, how did the eggs get there? So they think, some people think that Bishop went down, grabbed two eggs, put it onto the dropship, secured them in the Sulaco, and then went back down to get Ripley. But it just doesn't seem like Bishop. Like, I don't know. It is the most feasible explanation for how eggs got on the ship. because the queen didn't lay them. She was only on the ship for like 5 minutes.
Hey, she could have like had two in her hands as she was climbing up the scaffolding. And
then, oh my god.
Well, she has extra hands.
I just want to see that. Like, I want somebody to animate that, please. I will love you forever if you animate that, because that would be so funny.
She's climbing with her two tiny hands.
Yeah, she's
the
got the
big
arms holding the eggs. She's like, her boob hands.
That's how you know it's a girl. She's got boob hands.
Yeah, but thank you for asking about that, because that is a very good, just like, some people think that's true. I personally don't. I think that it would be kind of ruined. I also think maybe Alien 3 is just a weird fan fiction. That's fine.
Alien 3 is actually just a fever dream, and so is Resurrection.
It's a nightmare that Ripley is having on the Sulaco as she's going back to the place.
Yes. There we go. That's what Alien 3 is. Also, so the Sulaco.
Yes.
This is kind of off topic, but we know it's a marine ship.
Yeah.
What is the crew? Crew? Sulaco crew? There's no crew?
I mean, there are the pilots. The pilots that
they
pilot
died.
The, yeah, but they are the pilots of the Sulaco as well, I would
the
assume.
The rest of the crew?
Other than that, it's just autopilot.
Where's the engineer?
Well, one of the Marines is an engineer, so it's just a Marine piloted ship.
Can you imagine the future in which every Marine squadron has their own fucking ship? It's not like six squads on one ship. No, you get a ship, and you get a ship, and you get a ship. Every sergeant has their own ship for their squad of five people.
All right, so moving on.
I'm not going to let this die.
Yeah.
It's a gross waste of funds.
All right, next person on the cast list.
And you wonder why the United States spends like 30 times more on military than all the other countries beneath us combined.
Well, they're not the United States Marine Corps.
They're the Space...
I think it's the... Marine I think it is Corps. Still the UNS... UN... U... SMC? United Space Marine Corps, I think. It's one of those. There's look, for Marine Corps acronyms, there's like 20 of them for every sci-fi, okay?
What is it in Halo?
UNSC. United Nations Space Corps.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Space Marines.
Space Marines.
What anyway. Is it in Warhammer?
Anyway, the next character we've got to talk about is, as I said earlier, Bill Paxton. As
not,
Hudson.
Not Bill Pullman.
Not Bill Pullman.
That's the president from Independence Day.
Yes. This is Bill Paxton, who also gets killed by a predator later in his career.
Lucky man.
He's the only person in history that has been killed by a predator, a Terminator, and an alien.
Proving the crossover is real.
True. Very true. Actually, there is actually some... There's a fan theory out there before we talk about his character where... Hudson is like the great, 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 great grandson of the one from Predator 2. Because one of the plot points in Predator 2 is that what's her name is pregnant with his kid.
Oh my God.
So it's great, 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 great descendant. Anyway.
How do we explain the Terminator?
There is no explanation.
The 80s were the 80s, man. Get over it.
Time travel. There you go. It's Terminator. There's time travel already.
People can die.
Anyway, we've got Private Hudson. He is the comedic relief of this movie.
That's really all you need to
he
know.
He is the most quotable person in this movie. Almost every single quote except for "Get away from her, you bitch" is from Hudson that you've ever heard about this movie. Like, game over, man. Game over. All of them. They're just.
Oh well, that's the only one. Apparently, we can't
no,
think of any
I mean,
other ones.
I can think of a bunch of them. We got nukes. We got knives. Sharp sticks.
Sharp sticks.
But yeah, he's the comedic relief. So at the beginning of the movie, when we first meet him, he's very like. He's.
Dude,
confidently
dude,
goofy.
No, dude is horny, okay? He's horny for every woman who walks in front of him.
He's horny. He's confidently, like, he's always the confident one. He, like, backtalks his sergeant, even. He's the goofball. And then once stuff goes down, he kind of turns into the panicky guy. Like, he eventually gets his courage back, but unfortunately it's right before he dies. Yeah, he's definitely the comedic relief. He says all the funny lines. He's the one that everybody gets mad at because he's so afraid of everything. After the stuff goes down, he's always complaining. He's always stuff like that. But he's, like I said, he's definitely, it's Bill Paxton. So he's one of the more recognizable people on the crew. If you're watching this nowadays, you probably know who Bill Paxton is. So, moving on to the characters, we can kind of zoom through. So we've got Lieutenant Gorman. Gorman is the character that I was talking about. He's the new lieutenant that was brought into their unit.
The difference between him and Hicks, though, Hicks, you can tell, has had some, well, I'm going to say some. Obviously, we know the true backstory behind the actor's, you know, situation. But, like, in the movie, Hicks has clearly seen combat.
Yes.
Gorman has not. He's never seen combat. He's never done a drop. He's never done anything. He came from the Officer's Academy, straight to their unit. And so that's why none of the Marines get along with him.
Yes. Yeah, he says it in the drop, like you were saying, when they're dropping down to LV-426, he says that he's only had... they ask him how many combat drops he's had. He said zero. He's had like two simulated drops or something like that. So he has no experience whatsoever.
I think it was like four simulated drops. Simulated, yeah.
And they, and Vasquez, who's the next character, is like, how many combat drops? And he's like, no, he says zero. I can't remember if he says one or zero, but it doesn't matter. He's completely...
No, he's never seen... No, he says one, yeah. This one.
Yeah, but he's like you said, he's never seen combat. He's never been in anything like that. So they don't believe him at all.
He's second in command.
Yeah, no, he's first in command of the Marines. Yeah, because he's the lieutenant. Yeah, so he's in charge, but everybody... The only person who trusts what he says is Apone, and that's just because that's his job.
He knows how to take orders.
Yeah, he knows how to take orders, once again, because he was an actual Marine, which we'll talk about more in detail about that. So Gorman and Vasquez have... They have a lot of antagonism between each other, because Vasquez blames him for... her best friend getting killed, which we're going to talk about briefly in a second.
That's the skull guy.
Yeah, the other smart gun guy.
Yeah.
And
who was the asshole who brought the ammo that they weren't supposed to bring down into place and explode and everyone, you know what?
Yep. So he and her have like an antagonism. They have a moment later on where they're both going to die. Because she gets acided on her leg and starts trying to fight him off with a pistol, but of course pistols do nothing to the xenomorphs. And he goes and gets her again and tries to pull her, but then another xeno comes around the other side of him, and she says, "You were always an asshole, Gorman," as they blow each other up.
If I was Gorman, I'd be like, "You know me for like 4 hours. That's not fair."
But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what his character is. He's just there to have a little bit of a relationship with another side character, which is Vasquez.
She's a real Michelle Rodriguez type.
She is, but what's funny is that she is not a badass. She's been in a lot of little things. She was in Terminator 2 as the stepmom of John Connor.
Oh, the one that gets killed?
Stabbed. Yep. Yeah. But yeah, she was not, she's not a badass. She's not a, like, she's not a person that like does like weightlifting or anything like that. So she was one of the cast that had a really hard time with the military training.
Oh, wow.
Because she was not that person, but James Cameron liked her, so cast her.
Which is great, because you can't tell that at all.
Oh, no, she plays it off real well.
She does a great job. Good actress.
Yep. She's like you said, a Michelle Rodriguez type. She's the badass female person on this crew. She gets a lot of shit from Hudson.
He's horny. He is a horny boy.
He's so horny, but yeah, no, he does. There's a couple of other good lines from Hudson with her, is like ribbing.
Both work.
Where they're at their briefing, and aliens. She thought they said illegal aliens and signed up.
Oh my god.
or the one where she gets a hit on him, where they're in the locker room and he Vasquez, has anybody ever mistaken you for a man? No. Has anybody done that for you? Or yeah. something like that. I can't remember the exact quote. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she's cool. She's the badass. She wears a red bandana. She's the smart gunner. Smart guns are cool.
Or at least they would have been.
Or at least they could have been. Moving on to...
Who's the next most important person?
Let's see. We've got Vasquez. Apone. Okay, cool. We can actually talk about Apone. So Apone is the sergeant. That means he is the second in charge. He was a real military man. He was in the Marines. A little bit of a fun fact. He was the first Black Marine to be promoted to sergeant in Vietnam.
Wow.
Yeah.
A living legend. Is he still alive?
No, he's passed away, but
at the time, a living legend.
Yeah. Like that's really intense. So he was the one that like led all of their training. So he was an actual sergeant in the Marines. So he took them through actual boot camp, essentially. Wow. Like he did not let them skimp on anything.
What made him become an actor? What is this man's name? It's not Apone.
It's Al Matthews is his actual name.
Al Matthews. Sounds like my uncle's name.
He did some other stuff. He was in Fifth Element.
Unfortunately, he was in Superman 3.
Yeah, he died in 2018, actually. He didn't die that long ago.
Rest in peace, Mr. Matthews. Yeah. You will be missed.
So yeah, he plays a good sergeant. He's the you know... No nonsense guy. He yells at everybody. He doesn't put up with Hudson's BS. But at the same time, he does. Like, it's that level of like Hudson and him have probably been in the same unit for a very, very long time. So he knows Hudson is just a shit talker.
All
essentially.
Talk, no action.
He's really, really cool. Like I said, the rest of the movie wouldn't be the same without him. The Marines wouldn't have felt like real Marines if he wasn't there. So,
mm-hmm. Unfortunately, his character dies in the
alien attack, the nest attack,
the beginning nest attack with the 80% of the other
with
Marines.
The rest of them. Which I'm not going to go through any of these other ones.
There's one other girl. She's white and blonde. Yes. And there's another guy who's a smart gunner. He dies.
Pharaoh is one of the other girls. She's the pilot.
Oh, yeah. The two poor pilots.
Spunkmeyer and Pharaoh.
They die.
Spunkmeyer, where are you? Get up here. And then she opens the door and the alien. Yep. that was my inner mouth. just rambling through some other names real quick. Drake is Vasquez's best friend. That's, he dies, so it doesn't matter. Frost, Pharaoh, Spunkmeyer, Crow. There's a bunch. None of them matter.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
In the beginning of the movie, when we see the Marines picking up their gear, I believe it is Drake who picks up his smart gun, and on the side is written... Bug killer.
Yes.
Where did that come from?
So, one of the things that they did for this movie, and it goes back to Hicks too in a second, I'll talk about it. They were allowed to customize their gear. So once they were given what they were going to wear and what they were going to use as a gun, they were allowed to write shit on it and customize it the way they wanted it to. And so, he wrote Bug Killer. I can't remember what Hudson has on his. I think he has like a little flaming skull or something.
Yeah,
like
someone
that.
Has a flaming skull.
But Hicks, funny story about Hicks. Once again, he was cast 3 weeks before the movie started filming. So he didn't get to customize his own gear. So on his armor, he has a heart over his heart. And that was not Michael Biehn. He was the only one that didn't get to customize his stuff. Huh. Everybody else got to draw stuff on their helmets and their armor and their guns and everything like that. Which is why if you play like a terrible game, but if you play Colonial Marines and you get Hudson's rifle, pulse rifle, it has the writing that was on Hudson's rifle in the movie on it.
Terrible game. Really fun though. Really fun if you like being angry all the time.
Really fun if you like being angry every other level when you have to fight dudes.
When you have to fight dudes and your AI companions aren't cooperating and are shooting walls. When you're being chased by the motherfucking raven through the motherfucking sewers.
Oh, boy. Anyway, so those are the characters. Now we've got to go through the alien life cycle in more detail.
Let's start at the beginning. So when a mommy xenomorph and a daddy xenomorph fall in love, the mommy eats the daddy xenomorph and then lays an egg. That egg contains the face hugger. Let's talk about the face hugger. Or should we describe the eggs?
First of all, none of that is true.
No, none of that's true. Well, they probably do eat each other in desperation.
Sure,
but I doubt that that's how they
or
reproduce.
Or do xenos even need to eat? We don't know if they need to eat or not. So, anyway.
I'm very concerned now. I mean, their blood is acid. How do you do, like, what kind of molecular cycle would food have to go through in order to end up acid blood? Think about that.
The only thing we know is that they can spit out the drones can spit out the hive material.
Yes.
That's the only thing we
know.
The
black goopy material that creates the hives.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, let's start from the egg. It's kind of a chicken and the egg situation here, because the queen lays the egg, and unless you go by the director's cut of Alien, where people morph into eggs. So let's start with the egg. The egg design hasn't changed much from Alien. So take your stereotypical egg shape, like a normal white egg.
Nice oval shape.
Yes. So add like a base at the bottom of like, it's a four-pronged base. I'm looking up my egg. Yes. It's four things to kind of put the egg inside. The egg is a greenish, pukish brown color.
Yeah, it's not pretty to look at. The worst part being the very top of the egg, at the top of the oval. We're going to go ahead and just cut a star shape into that.
Not a star shape, a plus.
Is it just a plus?
Yeah,
I thought it was
more
of an asterisk.
No, it's just a plus because it's only four
pieces. And so we get four flaps, right? And inside, when you open those flaps up, because the egg is fleshy and is not, it's not solid. It's really not. You open those four flaps up and it's very pink and fleshy and
right.
Disgusting on the inside. It's full of goop.
It's full of
and
goop.
And an amniotic sac.
Yes.
And what's inside that amniotic sac?
Well, first I want to talk about one thing, because the outside of the egg is translucent as well. You can kind of see inside of it, and you can kind of see stuff moving.
Sometimes.
Inside.
I think it depends on who's directing the movie.
It does, yeah. I don't think you can really see it in this movie, because you don't get to see eggs that much in this movie. You only really see them
The moment they see them, Ripley's like, burn it.
Yeah. One thing I will note about these before we move on is the eggs in this movie, in Alien, the eggs kind of tapered up to a harsher
point. Yeah, they were very pointy.
Whereas this one, it's basically what you've seen the egg be in every other Alien movie, where it's round and at the top it's the four that split open. The inside is made from...
Oh, no.
Gross stuff. In the previous movie and in this movie, it's like lamb intestines and like... a bladder of a cow and just like all the basic fleshy like meat stuff that they could throw in there.
Can you imagine being the set designer for this or the special effects designer for this and having to call
and
around
get that stuff?
And like, I need the number for a cow ranch around here, cattle ranch. Just call and be all like, hey, when you send your cows to be butchered, do they save the bladders? I'm sorry to all the vegans and vegetarians out
yeah.
there. I'm sure this is...
Also, we're going to get way more gross with describing the inside of a face hugger
it's
in a second.
Bad.
Okay, so like you said, they open the egg opens up. You got the goopy organs at the top of the egg. And then if you're looking right down in it, especially, the face hugger will pop out. So to describe a face hugger. So let's start at the top. So starting at the top of it, you've got like kind of this weird like M shape at the top of its head. Like it doesn't have like a face per se.
No, it definitely doesn't have a face. So this is, it's definitely a crustacean is how I would describe it. And like Kyle described earlier, we are looking at as if you put your two hands together with the thumbs touching and you've got your four fingers on the side, kind of like if a kid was trying to do a butterfly, right?
Right. Yeah. So it's and, like,
but the thing is on the face hugger, we're really looking at fingers on the sides. We're talking about skeletal fingers, yes, double jointed and everything.
So in this movie versus Alien, they are, it is a little bit more, it's like at the same time, more fleshy and less fleshy. It's like weird. The fingers are more skeletal. In fact, when you see Bishop having the thing splayed out, it has like some sort of tendons or like bone on the inside of the fingers. But it's, yeah, it's like the same time, more fleshy, less fleshy. It kind of, the Xenos kind of have that same thing between movies, is like sometimes they'll be really fleshy, sometimes they won't. The facehuggers kind of do the same thing, but it's a little less obvious.
Maybe they're really hungry, and so they lost weight, and that's why it cycles just through.
Even though it's an exoskeleton, it sinks in.
Yeah, just whatever fat they had is just gone. That's the creepiest part about the facehuggers to me, is it really does look like a large man's hand.
Yeah.
With extremely thin fingers.
Thin, long fingers.
Yeah, these fingers are probably like 4 or 5 inches long each. Maybe right, cause, 6 inches.
When they actually face hug, their hands go, or the fingers go all the way to the back of your head.
Yeah, they can grip behind your ears.
Yeah. It goes like all the way to like the back of your scalp.
Yeah, and so connecting these two hands together, I guess we should say,
the spine.
Is a spine. And the spine is very long. And what I like to think, it's technically, you could call it a tail.
Yeah, because it's the spine to the tail.
It's very, very long, probably like 5 feet long, mm-hmm. 4 to 5 feet long. And I like to think that the reason that the facehuggers spring out of their eggs is because they're actually just coiled on top of their tails sitting in there.
Yeah, that's definitely what it seems like, because they launch themselves so fast. We never get to see them do that while they're running across the ground, because usually they just run across the ground on their little creepy fingers.
Yeah, they kind of skitter on their little creepy fingers like a crab.
Yeah.
And so the tails they use to wrap around your neck to force you to try and inhale. So they choke you in order to make you swallow their egg.
And it's also the defensive thing of like, if you try and remove it, they show it in the first movie. If you try and remove a facehugger, it'll tighten its tail around your neck to get a better grip and almost to choke you even more. So it's, as well as the fingers just not being, they're so tense that you can't pry them off, like you can't get it off because of the tail as well.
Yeah. And so towards the base of the spine, before it trails out into just the tail, we actually have two air sacs.
Yeah.
Are they air sacs or egg sacs?
They're air sacs.
They're definitely used to make sure that the victim is breathing, because they don't want the victim to die. If the host dies, the egg dies.
Right.
Right.
I'm assuming that the egg, or the embryo, I should say, is inside. Well, it's got the thing that comes down into your throat.
Yes. Inside the fallopian tube that it sticks into the victim's mouth.
I would
assume
that's where the embryo is, because like they show the lungs, I'll say,
inhaling,
specifically
exhaling,
like giving air to the host.
The entire thing is the color of a dead body.
Yes. Well, yeah, it's like a yellow color. Sometimes it has a little like pink at the very top where that M was, where the thumbs are.
Making it look like a weirdly splayed vagina is how I would describe it, which is how H.R. Giger wanted it.
Absolutely, yeah. it's a very iconic design. People, when you see the facehugger, you know what it is.
And if you don't know what it is, well, it's just...
You're in for a bad time.
If you meet someone who doesn't know what a facehugger is, you just make them listen to this section of this podcast episode. I think we did a wonderful job explaining something really disgusting that nobody would ever want to encounter.
Yeah. So in this movie, you really don't get to see the facehuggers that much, except for the big sequence in the med bay. And I'll talk something about special effects there when we get to special effects a little bit later. But for now, let's continue the life cycle here. So you got your embryo in your chest. It starts growing. Depends on the movie how fast it grows.
Anywhere between 20 minutes and 2 days.
Yes. In this movie, we only get to see the chestburster once. It's the sequence where they get to the nest where all the humans are, and they run into all the dead bodies, but they see this one girl who's still alive, and her chest starts bursting outwards, and that's why they're called chestbursters, is because they literally eat through your like flesh in your chest and then burst through your ribs.
So it makes me wonder if the egg actually stops at the sphincter leading between your esophagus and your
It's got to be above your stomach.
Or do they lay it in your lungs? But if they laid it in your lungs, you would instantly die. Your body would react very violently.
I would have bet, since it's like a parasite, I think like where it would sit would be perfect, because it would probably, if it takes the 2 days or whatever, like it like most movies show it to do, it would be absorbing nutrients from whatever food and stuff that you're ingesting as well. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So like, let's say if it ingested for a month instead of 2 days, like you would probably lose weight just like any other parasite that's eating off of you, because you wouldn't be getting all the nutrients from your food. And so over time you would lose it. But unfortunately for you, it only takes 2 days. So you're not going to notice anything you just die.
There's no benefit to having one of these parasites.
You might have some indigestion, I would assume, while you have one of these parasites in your throat.
But at the same time, I believe it is possible that the egg could make it all the way to the stomach and attach to the inner lining there, because we do know that xenomorphs are acid resistant.
It's true. It's very true.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's options. To be fair, what we know of the xenomorph life cycle is coming purely from the movies. I have not read any of the books.
Some books, some comics, but the comics and the books are pretty consistent with the movies for the most part, most of the time.
We're not getting all the answers. A little bit of extra information that we do get from that horrible video game, Aliens Colonial Marines, is that if you try to remove the embryo once it is implanted, we end up actually causing some sort of cellular degeneration in the host, because the embryo will release a toxin that acts as a cancer, killing the host anyhow.
Yep.
So there's actually...
So let's just break it down for you. You can't remove the facehugger.
Nope.
And you can't remove the chestburster when it's inside your chest. So basically, if you do get facehugged, you're dead.
You're dead.
No matter what.
You're going to die. Unless
whichever way you want to go.
Some magical way that it doesn't burst through your heart and lung.
And cause massive hemorrhaging.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, and to your belly point, I mean, we do have, as much as I hate the movie, AVP Requiem, where the
belly
pred alien implants the embryos through your mouth, somehow gets to your belly, but also only to pregnant women. So does it get to their uterus? It's complicated. Let's not talk about it.
He likes them pregnant ladies.
Anyway, so let's talk about the chestburster. The difference between the chestburster in this movie and pretty much every other movie, with the exception of Alien Covenant, but we don't like to count that one, is that this chestburster does have little arms. Little arms that it pushes
it
itself out with.
It does have little arms. Usually they're just little snakes.
Yeah, you can see their arms on
like little
the snake
vestigial
body.
Arms.
Well, yeah, but they're not like hanging off. They're just like the skin texture of an arm on the snake, and it would grow out as it got bigger.
Got it.
But for these, there's definitely the definitive like arms pushing itself out as it's like snarling and snapping at them.
I like the design of the chestbursters mostly because I get the feeling that this is just the inner mouth. Because it's got the little shiny teeth and everything. I think they're adorable. Sadly enough, I probably really shouldn't.
Yeah, right. They're still gross.
They're slimy and weird, and they're still flesh colored like the facehuggers. They don't turn black until they molt.
Yeah, as they get bigger, they molt. So I mean, the only other thing to really talk about them is they have the thing that they have that is very similar to the facehugger versus the full xenomorph is the long tail.
They have very long tails.
It's very reminiscent of the facehugger tail, more so than the xenomorph tail, because it doesn't have the
spike at the end.
It doesn't have anything.
And so when you look at the chestburster, you actually can see this bridge between facehugger and xenomorph, with the extremely long tail from the facehugger, but also the upper body, you know, waist up, quote unquote, is it's just a tiny Xeno.
Yeah.
It's got the smooth, elongated skull, and it's, you know, the shiny teeth, man. The little shiny teeth. And it's got, you can see, like, the rib cage and everything. Yeah. And even on this one with the teeny tiny arms.
Yeah, you can still see, like, essentially what it looks like is a very, very fleshy Xenomorph. Mm-hmm. But small.
Shrunk down. Get rid of the legs.
But yes, as you said, they go snaking off.
Yeah, they slither off.
To go grow and molt into our main antagonist, main xenomorph of any of the alien movies.
The Praetorian?
No. That is something completely different.
The hunter.
Yeah, these are the drones. Or the warriors, depending on which way you want to say it. Depending on which canon you're following, because they could be either.
Yeah, drones makes the most sense because we're talking about a hive.
Yes.
Right? With a queen at the base.
Right. But in the novelization and the original script, there were actual drones that were like albino xenomorphs that took care of the eggs. They were specifically like albino, creepy.
I'm sorry.
Basically what the necromorph looks like.
You caught me by surprise with that. There's these little bitch ass xenomorphs that do nothing but care for the babies.
That was in the original script, in the original book. But anyway, never filmed or never anything. But
might be a fan film out there that I'd be willing to watch.
Okay, so we have the base xenomorph. So the base xenomorph changes every single movie. The design fluctuates with different things. So in the first movie, you had the completely domed head.
And it was just a dude in a suit.
Well, it's still a dude in a suit here.
Well,
but...
yeah, but it was literally like he walks like a dude. He does the weird slow walk hand thing.
Yeah, he does.
Just walks like a dude in a suit.
But one
hides behind things like a dude in a suit.
One of the key things that's different with that one and this one is, once again, the dome. So it had the actual dome thing on the top of its head, and you could kind of see transparent inside. You could see a human skull, and then you could see these ridges that are here in this design. So James Cameron basically took off the dome, and the reason for that was actually a practical reason, is they were going to keep the dome, but then he talked to Ridley Scott about how the suit's dome kept breaking while they were filming, and of course James Cameron wanted to do more action-based stuff, so it just wasn't a good idea to have the dome. It wasn't gonna work as well. So they went back to the design board. They were like, okay, what if we took the dome off and you just have what remains of the ridges going down the long elongated skull? And they didn't keep the full skull face, but they kind of like concaved the front of it to kind of look like a skull. Like, so that's why a lot of fans have posited the theory that either young xenomorphs, like they or xenomorphs eventually lose their dome. Like maybe like they only keep their dome for a little bit. And that's why the one we saw in Alien, cause it was super young. We just got there.
Yeah, it was like 6 days old.
Right. Versus the ones on LV-426 have been there for months. Probably. So they've just lost their dome because it's just natural that they lose it.
Mm-hmm. And as they continue eating, I'm going to put that in air quotes because we don't know if they do. Continue eating and growing and aging, they eventually class out of the dome. They have to change classes and yes. They get to pick between. What do they get to pick between?
But okay, so going back to the actual design. So in the first movie, it's very biomechanical is the way I would describe it. There's a lot of like pieces,
tubing
and like pieces on it that kind of look like car parts and stuff. Just like,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like it's not.
Oh, yeah. The chest looks like an engine.
Yeah. It's not fleshy but it's like, I don't know. It's they always describe it as biomechanical. So that's how I'll describe it. This one kind of loses the mechanical part. It doesn't become fleshy, but it becomes very skeletal. Mm-hmm. Like these look very like skelety. They're like, they definitely have an exoskeleton, as
yes.
People would say.
This is when you really start seeing that they decided to go with more of an insect vibe.
Yes.
Also, you know, deciding that there's going to be a queen.
The story of the film.
Decides
yeah.
that, oh, well, they're kind of insects now. And, yeah, the biggest difference is going from just looking like they smacked a bunch of car parts and said, hide in the shadows, to a guy. And what we have in this movie, which is much more detailed, I would say. Mm-hmm. A lot of time and effort went into designing these xenomorphs that we see as the main antagonists in Aliens. They are much more skeletal. They have a lot of ridging going on all parts of their bodies, not just the dome or the elongated skull, but the legs, the hips, mm-hmm. the arms.
Yeah.
You can see a lot of detailing in them. And even I think the tail is a lot more detailed, and they really made it more prehensile in this, making it to where they use their tails to attack and to wrap around. Whereas in the last movie, it seemed like his tail just kind of dragged on the floor.
Yeah. Except for the one scene where it goes underneath Lambert's legs. Yeah. That's the only time you see it do anything. But yeah. And also one of the biggest differences there, you're right, is the tail in Alien, one had a tiny little spike on the bottom of it, but also, it wasn't like this one. It literally looks like if you've seen a dinosaur fossil in a museum and you look at the tail, like that looks exactly what that looks like. Whereas Alien, it wasn't completely skeletal. It like had like a, it had an underside of it, kind of like,
yes, it did.
Yeah. So like it just, these look very okay. Here's what it is. The aliens in this movie are more uniform in their design than the alien in Alien, and even the alien in Alien 3.
Any other aliens. Yeah.
Like this one, like the entirety of it looks very, like it looks the same. It looks skeletal all the way throughout its body. And so it makes the design look uniform versus slapped together car parts or even the alien from Alien 3, which looks like fleshy but also skeletal on its chest but also no tubing on its back. And I know it's because it's the dog alien or whatever, but at the same time it's still like I like how these, like you said, they're insects. They look, you look at two ants side by side and they look exactly the same from a single hive. So
colony.
Yeah,
I think it's the colony.
It's colonies, because the line in the movie is, bees, man, bees have hives. So you've got your basic xenomorph design, just to go over it really quick. You got the creepy hands, which are three, but they're actually four of the fingers are stuck together. So you've got three actual fingers, but the bottom two and the middle two are stuck together. And
so it's like
thumb.
A thumb and two sets of two.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And they're
live long and prosper.
Yes, actually, perfect. That's a good explanation. And you've got, like we said, the very skeletal look. So it's got like ribs on the outside. Mm-hmm. Its feet, it's got four toes with little claws on them. I don't think they have the digitrid legs in this movie. I'm pretty sure they just have normal standy legs, normal human legs.
Oh, so the knees aren't backwards?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think they have that in this movie. So it's got the four tubes coming off its back. And the shoulder tubes are smaller. The shoulder pads, I guess is what I would describe them as, are smaller than they were in Alien. An alien, they're freaking huge.
Giant shoulder pads.
Yeah, Big Chap has huge shoulder pads. Anyway, so it's got its inner mouth, just like always. It has the lips, but it's less lippy than the previous one.
Yeah, the last alien looked like he wanted to give you a big old kiss.
It only gets better in Alien 3. The one in Alien 3 has big old lips.
Oh, big old dick-sucking lips.
So, yeah. God. Honestly, there's the alien is... It's an alien. I can't think of anything else to describe with it. It's very
so iconic at this point.
Yeah, this is I won't say this is the more iconic of the designs, but like,
it doesn't matter which one you look at. If you throw any of the aliens from the franchise that aren't fleshy colored, any of the black ones.
So the ones not from Resurrection is what you're saying.
Yes. If you throw any of the basic black aliens at a person and ask them, "What is this?" They're going to be like, "That's an alien."
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they probably don't know. Your Joe Schmo on the street does not know that they're called xenomorphs.
Actually, you'd be surprised nowadays. Like, oh, so a lot true. Of people know the name xenomorph now. Would not say the same back in the day, but now. Anyway, so So we do get to see the next level of life cycle in this movie. So real quick, a lot of controversy on how aliens get to be this level. The fan slash video game theory is a Praetorian, which would be a and also makes sense with Alien 1.
It's called a queen in training.
Yes, essentially. So it's basically a drone would start molting again. After it's already reached its full size, it would start molting again. It would get a small crest, grow larger and larger and larger until eventually it's the queen. And then it can lay its eggs and then start a whole new colony. The movie explanation, a.k.a. the non-canon Alien 3 cut, is that there is a queen face hugger, a specific face hugger that implants a queen embryo.
But who lays that?
The queen.
Another queen.
Another queen, yeah. So,
does the queen know when she's laid a queen face hugger?
No, I guess not. I would assume she would know, and she would get the drone
it
to
would
move.
Protect it?
No, to probably move it to another place to start another colony, I would assume, is the idea.
How do bees do it? How do ants do it?
Bees do it. If a queen dies, one will molt into another queen. So it's I believe the Praetorian theory. Also, I've seen some really cool Praetorians over my time playing video games and also just fan art and stuff.
All those AVP video games, man. Gonna rot your brain.
Also, gonna blow your mind real quick. That terrible movie with the Pred Alien. That Pred Alien is a Praetorian.
Definitely, as you can tell by the crest.
Mm-hmm. It has the smaller queen crest, which we're gonna talk about the big queen crest right now. So we get our big bad queen.
How many... normal drones, big is the queen.
Height-wise, probably 2.5. If they're standing up.
Got it.
Because she's supposed to be, I think she's supposed to be like 12 to 15 feet tall.
Nice.
If she's standing full size.
A good size, medium size monster.
And that's if she's standing like up. Like if she's...
like both her knees fully extended.
If she's doing what she does in this movie, she's only like maybe 8 feet, because when she's fighting the power loader, she's like,
yeah, she's crouched.
Her head is crouched, so
yeah. And so that power loader is only like 7 feet tall,
right? So she's not like huge in this movie, but in the first AVP movie, the older queen,
oh, she's huge.
She's huge. She's like T-Rex size.
Yeah.
So they definitely grow in size as they get older. But anyway, so. When you get your first look at the queen, when she first arrives in the big nest, when Ripley arrives, she is on this basically, it looks like a throne. It's very like indicative of a throne, but she's basically on this giant piece of the hive, and you've got the big old goopy egg sac coming out
the back.
Oh god,
the egg sac is so gross. It looks like somebody took a bunch of those Chinese paper lanterns and like stuck them together and then like sprayed it with like KY jelly.
Yeah.
It's nasty.
It looks like a big old like a big fat caterpillar. But transparent.
Oh, a giant earthworm.
A giant earthworm or something that has the segments. And then, like, but you can see the eggs inside of it. And then it has the goopy leg, the egg part at the end of it. Anyway.
It just goes, like, plork. And yeah, then here's an egg.
Spits out an egg with all sorts of, like, goop and slime
on it. So much KY jelly went into making this movie, yeah. Guys. You don't even want to know.
So you got the alien queen up on the throne. And she finally... before she even breaks off of it, like her mouth comes out. So basically the way to describe her face or her head. So she's got this big old crest with three, like a trident up at the top of it. And then it kind of tapers down almost like a shield. And then underneath the shield is the actual like face of the queen, which is the big, like Jay Leno chin mouth. It just take the front part of a xenomorph, but like cut out like a part so that its jaw is more protruding, and keep the domed head of the front of it, but put it underneath the giant crown crest shield.
Well, actually, based on this picture that we have up to help us remember what she looks like, it looks like really the domed head goes into the shield.
It does. So whenever she's first sitting on the throne. when Ripley first goes in, the head's retracted. Mm-hmm. And then Ripley takes a step back and the queen's head pops down and starts moving and looking at Ripley.
I feel like when the queen actually opens her mouth and has her inner jaw come out. Because instead of having inner mouths, queens have inner jaws.
It's a full-on, like, yeah.
Yeah, it's really strange. I think that was like an intimidation technique. You know, like a display to be like, get away from my babies.
Yeah, pretty much.
Ripley didn't listen.
So she's got... essentially, the way I was trying to describe it is like her front face can move independently of the crest.
Yes.
So like it's prehensile. So it's not, she doesn't move her entire crest every time
she
looks.
It's like she has an exoskeleton, yes, but only on her head.
Yeah. So she's got the big old shield crest on the top of her head. She's got a very ridged neck going down to her body.
And she has four arms.
So she has, especially in this movie, she has these arms that base the big, actual big arms, usually are standing like full on out, like to your side. Like if you're pretending to be a scarecrow, like that's how they're at. They're like bent outwards like that. And they're usually like moving around like that because of the puppet. But we'll talk about that.
It was a puppet.
It's a giant puppet.
And then she has little arms, which are probably the size of a normal xenomorph's arms that are coming out from lower on her chest.
Right. So imagine like T-Rex arms is like the way it is. They have more fingers, but that's the size of them.
It's pretty hilarious.
As I called them earlier, they're her boob arms.
Yeah, she has boob arms. Them's her titty arms. Fun fact, all women have titty arms. It's not just alien queens. We, however, have actually become vestigial with our titty arms. They're not important. They were used in mating a long time ago. It's not important.
Yeah, it's very unclear what those arms are used for, but like we were talking about earlier, maybe for egg transportation, because they are kind of the right size. Not for like a bunch of eggs, but like for her to pick up one egg and move it to the side or something like that. I don't know. She has drones for that.
I mean, if anything, why does she have the big arms?
It's true.
If anything.
You just get that from the molting process, I guess.
Yeah, if could that's you imagine what it is. Like waking up one day, like it's butterfly style, like she has to cocoon herself and then she wakes up. Oh, I'm a queen. What the fuck? I have extra arms. First alien queen probably had a really hard time with that.
So moving down her body. So like we said, she has the huge arms, and then she's got the little tiny arms coming off of the center of her chest. On her back, you can't really see it in this picture, but instead of the tubing, she has basically this like fan of really large spikes coming out from the back of her on both sides. I think it's three sets or a set of three of them with them like descending in size. So it's one large one, one medium size, one small one going down, sticking, jutting off the side of her back. And that's when her tail starts, and her tail is, like we said, it's very skeletal, like dinosaur level skeletal, but it's also like, it starts on her lower back. And she's got, like, basically the ridges of, like, what your spine
just your
looks like.
Her spine is just sticking out of
it's
her back.
It's just extended outwards, yeah. Leading to her giant long tail with a huge, huge scorpion-style, like, point, stabby point.
Stinger,
yeah.
I doubt they inject poison or anything.
They are actually supposed to have barbs on their tail, supposedly.
Oh, my God.
Once again, that's books and stuff.
Things we don't get in these gosh darn movies.
Because in the AVP game, when you do your tail strike, it, like, causes them to get dizzy stuff. Anyway, she's got this big old tail that she uses a lot in the battle versus the power loader.
Well, yeah, she can't really move around very well for some reason.
But yeah, she always, like, during the battle, she has a lot of moments where her tail is, like really, like, scorpion style, like, pointed, like, ready to stab down at something. So it's this fun thing, like, I need to talk about her legs, too, but with the queen, it's very interesting because, like, she is not supposed to be a warrior, but she clearly is, like, probably the most efficient xenomorph in the hive.
I don't know.
She has to do something.
I'm looking at her legs right now, and I'm understanding why she's always crouched down. So the queen has really long, thin legs, just like the other aliens. Actually, I think her legs are thinner.
They are, yeah.
And the worst part about it is she has a regular knee, and then her leg extends backwards.
It's the,
and then she's got another knee that goes backwards.
It's the T-Rex leg. Is yeah. what it is. It's, you know, it's that the T-Rex or dog back leg.
Yeah.
It's that same leg.
It's really strange. And also she has high heels, so.
That's why it's hard for her to run.
Yeah. She got a hard time. This lady living a hard life. She got like 600 kids wearing high heels all the time. She just wants to take a nap, y'all. Ripley came in and just fucked shit up. She was like, I'm not having this. I'm done. I didn't leave my husband for this.
But yeah, so she's got high heels. It's
even her toes look manicured. I just want to point this out.
Her toes do look manicured. But yeah, she's got some like little like rib things coming off of different parts of her legs, like little, I wouldn't call them spikes. I don't know what you'd call those.
Yeah, it looks like a shard, like
a bone shard.
Yeah, like a bone shard. I mean, you can actually see her exoskeleton. Like, there's no layer over it.
Yeah,
you can see extra bone. But on she her
is,
legs.
Yeah, she's definitely, like we said earlier, the exoskeleton is, I guess, like very apparent with her.
Yeah.
Anyway. So those are the aliens. Now we got to do favorite and least favorite.
Oh gosh.
So what do you want to start with? Do you want to start least favorite?
I do want to start with least favorite.
Okay.
My least favorite moment is when Ripley leaves Jonesy on the space station and we never find out what happened to him, which is, I guess, the entire movie, us never finding out what happened to him. I'm just saying, like, that cat was a main character in the first movie. He didn't die. She went through so much to keep him alive and get him off that ship. And now you're just going to leave him? What? Because your daughter died 57 years ago or something?
She only died because she was 60-something.
She died like 3 years.
3 years before she got back, yeah.
All right.
If that's the truth.
Makes it more sad. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, that is legit my least favorite. I mean, it's a good movie. There's not a lot to hate about it.
Yeah, so I'm going to kind of cop out too with my least favorite. My least favorite moment about this movie is that the theatrical cut exists. So here's a little fun Toronto tidbit again. The special edition that most people have on any Blu-ray or DVD that you own right now was originally going to be the theatrical cut. It was the version that James Cameron liked and wanted to be there. But the producers came in and said, oh, it's a little too slow, so we need you to cut out some stuff. And the stuff that they wanted to cut out was the stuff that it's not important, but it's fun. And some of it is important, like the Ripley's daughter thing. Completely not in the original cut. You don't even know Ripley has a daughter in the original cut of the movie. And it's kind of like, knowing that the special edition exists, you're just like, but why did you cut? Like, that's such a good character moment. There's some fun little action sequences when they're on LV-426 with the auto turrets that they set up. Where they basically set them up in the only places where the aliens can get. And there's some tense things with, like, the first set runs out of ammo because there's just so many aliens. And it's a really good, it's kind of a special effects thing, but they didn't have that many alien suits. So having that moment where you hear all the noises and snarls of the aliens and the guns run out of ammo really gives you that feeling of, oh, there's so many more aliens than we can see.
I mean, at this point in my life, I have seen the special edition so many times, I don't even remember what is missing from the theatrical release. I don't care. Like,
the only time that we saw the theatrical cut, you and I saw the theatrical cut together.
Oh, in theaters.
Was when we went to go see it in theaters, and it was the theatrical cut, and I was so mad.
You were very upset.
Because I was just sitting
there.
But
we got t-shirts out of it.
We did get t-shirts out of it. But I was sitting there just like stewing the entire time because it would go past the Ripley's daughter thing and I'd be like, why isn't that in a movie? Kind of some freaking. Yeah, that's my least favorite thing is that the fact that the studio heads decided, oh no, we need to cut these scenes out, and it didn't make it a worse movie, but it also didn't like.
Didn't improve it either.
Like, it was fine the other way, and James Cameron wanted it the other way. And I, you know, it's just funny because now, like, if a studio had ever told him, like, you need to cut that out, he would be like, no, I'm not doing that because he's James Cameron.
Freaking James Cameron.
But, like,
of James Cameron's Avatar.
But, yeah. Yeah, that's my least favorite thing. Honestly, once again, I love this movie. There's not a lot to rag on it with, but...
I've seen this movie so many times now.
But favorite moments. This is more fun.
My favorite moment is when everyone's dying down in the hive and Ripley's like, fuck this, I'm driving this tank. She doesn't know how to drive the tank, so she wears the treads on the tires down, and now they don't have a tank.
That's a very good favorite moment, actually. It's pretty great.
Yeah,
because there's like, that one point where she runs over the alien that tries to attack them,
too. Just runs it right over. Yep, it's a fun scene.
It's very good, because Gorman's like, no, we can't. They're all dying. It's fine. Oh, God.
They're all dying, but it's okay. Oh, poor Gorman. He's just, like, hyperventilating throughout
the
movie. Oh, yeah,
he doesn't know what to do, because he has no combat experience. He's like, oh, God, everybody's dying. What do I do?
The company set this mission up to fail.
Yeah.
By assigning this, like, I bet they were like, give us your most inexperienced unit, or your unit that needs the most work, or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even the unit that needs the most work. It's almost like they assigned these guys that, I don't know, they knew that Gorman was going to be assigned to this new group, or this group that just lost their lieutenant probably in a battle somewhere, and they knew that he was very inefficient. So they were like, okay, these Marines are probably going to go down there and die, which means that Burke is going to be able to get a specimen and bring it back because everybody else is going to be dead. That sounds like what it is. Because the company knows the Xenomorphs are real, the entire movie. The
company's so messed up.
The
company knows the Xenomorphs are real because Ash told them.
Well, yeah, because Mother knew. All that got transmitted through Mother. Mother knew, yeah.
Yeah.
The whole reason why they stopped where they stopped was because Mother knew that the alien thing was there. Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff.
Is there a prequel to Alien that isn't what we've been getting?
Unfortunately, no.
Talking about why Wayland, how do they know these exist?
Right,
it's David. It's all because of David.
Oh, God. Anyway, my favorite moment is one that we talked about earlier. I absolutely love the climax of this movie. Specifically the alien fight on the Sulaco. It's iconic. It's so well done. It kind of tapers into special effects a little bit, where we talk about the miniatures mixed with the big old puppet.
Oh, man.
But it cuts so perfectly between the two of them. It's intense. Like, Ripley is, like, piloting this giant suit that is a dude inside behind her.
Just a very large, muscular, strong man.
Yes, inside the power loader, and she's standing on top of it and moving her arm, and then he has to move his arm after she moves his. I'm sure it took, like, practice, like, out the wazoo to get it right. But it's just, I don't know, it's a very good action sequence. There's a reason why so many places have tried to copy it, or, you know, riff on it and stuff like that. It's very iconic. There's so many really good hero moments for Ripley. There's some really, like I said, really intense moments, like the one where the queen comes in to start using its inner mouth, and she, like, grabs it right as it gets close to her, and it's just like right in front of her face, and she activates the flamethrower, the torch. Like, there's just so many moments like that. The queen puppetry, which we're about to talk about, is phenomenal. And it just all blends to such a good climax and such a good like end to this, like, action film. Like, it's such a good, like, this is a final boss in a video game, right? Like, this is such a final boss area. Like, if you took this movie and turned it into a video game, it would be so easy to make the final. You wouldn't have to, like, look for something to make the final boss. No, you have it. You're in a power loader, you're fighting the queen, go.
Oh my gosh. What was the final boss of Colonial Marines?
It was the queen, but it was in a thing.
Did we crush her?
No, we shot, like, a container at her, and she flew into space or something like that.
I just remember,
because you had to run between containers and activate switches and stuff.
Yeah, and someone had to be the distraction.
But
the whole time.
It was so lame. It was so dumb.
Yeah, it wasn't as good.
It wasn't as good.
It was not as the Raven was a better boss.
Yeah,
We didn't even kill him, I don't think.
No, we did. We were in the power litter, remember? And like when you kill him, you snap his neck. That's with right. The power litter. Anyway, let's stop talking about Colonial Marines because it's stupid and it's not canon. So
Hicks is alive.
Anyway, yeah. So let's talk cinematography, special effects.
This movie is so well shot.
Yeah.
It has a great use of darkness.
It's the stereotypical James Cameron blue for darkness.
It's
yeah.
Blue.
Little known fact, the Xenomorph suit for this movie were not blue. They are actually brown, but James Cameron's lighting made them look blue. Bluish black. Yeah.
Nice.
That's all the lighting. So the little, actually the little figure that you bought me is accurate.
Yes. The brown suit.
Mm-hmm.
I buy Kyle a lot of Xenomorph figures for Christmas
of course.
And stuff because why not? When we first met, little Toronto tidbit, when Kyle and I first met, he had a Xenomorph figure. He was very brown, and his name was George.
He's from Resurrection. He was a Todd yes. McFarlane figure for Resurrection.
And he could not stand on his own.
He could not.
Not on his life.
He tried his best.
along the way, he broke.
One time we moved, yeah, he got caught in a weird spot and he broke. I think his leg broke off or something like that.
And so for years now, I had been looking to replace George for Kyle because I knew how much he loved George. And I think 2 years ago, I managed to find a nice little brown Xenomorph figure. It's not the same one. Thank God it's not from Resurrection.
Yeah. Only reason why he was fun was because he was from my best friend Julio. And that's why I got the name George, is because we named him after this paleontologist we used to talk to all the time back in the day when we were kids.
Jesus Christ.
Who was Dinosaur George.
Fucking nerds.
Yeah, so the movie is very, very well shot. It's such a crazy... The cinematography... I mean, it's James Cameron's cinematography, so it's very, very good in general. But the thing is that one of the things you don't realize with this movie is the use of miniatures is sometimes it's just you don't even notice.
I had no idea there were miniatures in this movie. I'm not even gonna lie. This is the first time I'm hearing of it.
Well, funny enough, there was, so whenever he was screening it for the first time in front of some producers, they got mad because they thought he spent all of his budget on set design, not special effects. And afterwards, after the screening, they turned to them and were like, no, like, that was all miniature stuff. That was all special effects that you are complaining about that was set design. And they were like, what? There's a lot. There's so many, like, little miniature just working in the background that you never really notice. The Queen is a really good example. They had a little armature puppet Queen. It wasn't stop motion or anything. It was just a little puppet that they used, and they had a puppet power loader that they were able to use for a couple of shots where the Queen was a little bit more mobile. So it made the dynamic battle at the end feel faster because they were able to make the Queen do some fun, like, little turns and moves that the giant puppet wasn't able to.
The giant puppet. Can we talk about that?
Okay, so this puppet.
How many people did it take to pilot this puppet?
I've heard 12. I've heard 13. I've heard
47.
A lot. So the way that the Queen puppet was originally, what's the word? Shown off. Like when they were trying to get approval to do the giant Queen puppet, they built it out of like trash, essentially. Like it was like trash bags and like, you know, those black foam tubing things that you put over pipes.
That you put over PVC pipe.
Yeah, so they built it with that, and so it's this giant trash bag Queen puppet. The funny thing is, it looks very close to the design too, but like you can clearly tell it's the Queen. But
I would have been like, as the producer, I'd be like, so it's not going to be made out of trash bags, right? When you do it.
But yeah, so it's this. It literally is. 95% of the stuff that you see the Queen do is the puppet. There's only a couple of the shots with the little, or the giant puppet. There's only a couple of shots with the little tiny puppet that you see in the final battle. Once again, just to make the Queen look a little bit more mobile. Because in the chase, when Ripley's running from it, like, all you need to see is that it's coming out down the hallway at her. And they were able to do that with the big one. But in the fight, they wanted to, like, oh, she's got to stab with her tail. Like, okay, we don't We don't have the puppet doesn't have the snaky tail that can do that in a way, in the way that we want it to. So we got to do it this way. But yeah, man,
So it's actually a giant marionette. Right?
Kind of. Yeah. I mean, there's people, I think there's one or two people actually inside of it. And then the others are actually, yeah, like you said, marionetting it. And there's hydraulics and all sorts of other stuff, of course, involved because it's a giant, you know, special effect. It's Stan Winston. So
hats off to you, Mr. Winston.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
You definitely outdid yourself on this one.
If you don't know who Stan Winston is, Jurassic Park.
Fucking Google it.
Yeah, just Google who Stan Winston is because he's amazing. God rest his soul. But
rip.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, it's so impressive. And like so there's a lot of fun special effects tricks. I did want to mention some of these. So when the Marines are first waking up for their pods, they only built like 4 of the sleep pods.
The mirrors.
Yeah. So what they did is they set up a mirror to reflect it and make it look like there were like 12 pods because they set it up so it would reflect itself over and over and over again. Very fun special effects trick. You don't notice it. There's no, they don't like, because they never show all of them opening at the same time. So like there's never that, you can't see like, oh, look, it's just a reflection. They're just opening in a weird distance from each other because, you know, that's how reflections work. So there's one. In the sequence where it's the cover image of our episode,
yes,
where the aliens are up in the thing. Once again, they only had 4 suits, but they needed to make it look like there was more. So I can't remember exactly the trick that they did, but they did a camera trick when he goes up and looks at it to make it look like there's 4 with the lighting. If I
also
remember.
Mirrors.
No, it wasn't mirrors. I'm pretty sure it was just the lighting. I'm pretty sure what they did is they made sure that the way that the aliens were positioned, the 4 suits that they had, and then the lighting being so dark around them, that when you see them all where they're at, it looks like more things moving than just the 4 suits. It looks like there's something behind the other ones moving around. But, yeah, so that's crazy. I don't know. This movie is just, it's one of those movies from this time frame that is so, timeless with its special effects.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's one of those movies that you really don't notice, like, archaic special effects. None of it looks bad. There's not, like, anything that's, like, glaring, like, oh, this is from this time period, you know?
You know, except for the actual technology that they use sometimes.
Well, yeah, but I mean, but if you look at that, that kind of aesthetically goes with what we saw in Alien.
True.
So, I mean, we're supposed to assume that this is a sci-fi universe where they went lo-fi, right? That's what they call it.
Cassette tapes are actually how we run our ships.
I mean, yeah.
An 8-track player is still the most advanced technology we've ever seen.
I mean, it's not as bad in this movie as it is in Alien.
Oh, man, Alien
it's
so
very
bad.
Yeah. But in this movie, they don't use a lot of actual technology.
No, you really don't get to see a lot of like switchboards or anything.
Yeah, I mean, you get the probably the most technological thing that you get is the schematics of Hadley's Hope that they're looking at on the big mm-hmm. table that he scrolls through mm-hmm. with a little mouse thing.
So let me ask the question: how many years were between the first movie and this movie?
Almost 10, I believe. I think Alien was 79 and this is 86. So, it's a long, long, long time. Let me double check that. Make sure. 79. Yep. 79 to 86.
Wow.
So,
almost, you can't see that happening these days, going that long without a sequel.
And if there is a sequel from like that long, it usually does not turn out well.
No, it's not gonna be good.
Yeah, like, you know, when they'll be like, oh, we want to do a soft reboot of this movie 10 years later, like
or at least that's how it's been going.
Yeah.
We had Alien 3 and then Resurrection, and then how many years was it before they made Prometheus?
A lot.
Many.
I mean, there was AVP and AVPR in between there, but yeah.
God, I love AVP. It's one
the
of
first
my
AVP is
movies.
Actually really kind of good. Very underrated in my opinion. But That's another episode.
That's another medium-sized monster we can cover. Or monsters.
Monsters. Ooh. But anyway, yeah, I mean, just the special effects of this movie, you could write a huge, like, book just on the special effects of this movie and how they all work and how they were able to make things, like, the mood that they were able to get from the sets as well, especially inside of Hadley's Hope, is just so fantastic. Like, the dark, like we said, all the like, just little tiny touches, like the, oh, you can see scorch marks on the wall over there, mm-hmm. from an explosion that went off 5 years ago or 5 months ago or something. Like, it's there's so much, like, detail like that put in, and that kind of just goes throughout the entire movie, in my opinion.
I definitely agree. There's a lot of little details that make this movie worth rewatching, because you never know when you're going to go, oh, I didn't see that last time.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of what makes it timeless.
Yeah. So last section we got, sound design and, music. So I will talk about two things first. One, the sound effects that they used for the guns is so iconic. And, like, you can't, if you hear the pulse rifle sound and it's not on the pulse rifle, it will sound strange. Like, the pulse rifle sound effect is so specific, and it's one of those things that in video games they've gotten it wrong. Like, in some Aliens games or AVP games, they've not used the exact sound bite, and you can just instantly, like, if you're a fan of this movie, you hear it, you're like, that's not it. Nope.
Wasn't that one of the only good things about Colonial Marines, is they got the sound?
Oh, all the
right.
Sounds were great, yeah.
And everyone was like, man, I never realized how much I hated the freaking pulse rifle sound until I played Colonial Marines.
Until you hear it 20 billion times.
It was my only gun.
But, yeah, I mean, that, the smart gun sound is very iconic. There's just the guns are very specific to this movie, and I love it. The other thing is the alien snarls and stuff like that that you'll hear in our intro all this time is it's also very iconic. Like, the aliens in this movie, some of the sound effects are only in this movie. There's a lot of, like, the alien, like I don't want to say roars, but snarls. That are very specific to this movie, where it's just this, like, high-pitched, like, rear! Like, that's only in this movie. I know. I love it. My onomatopoeias are great.
The aliens are just cats, guys. They're just angry cats. Just throw some tuna at them.
But, yeah, those kind of sound effects are specific to this movie. The queen, I love that they gave her own kind of, like, tenor to her snarls.
Mm-hmm.
They're adjacent to the normal xenomorphs. Like, you can tell, like, they're similar, but there's a different, like, definitely bassiness to her, like, just even hisses that you've heard the xenos make, but, like, her hisses are very, like, intense and deep and bassy.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that. But, let's see. I mean, sound, music. I know I'm the one who really notices these kind of things.
Is there even any music in this movie?
Yes, there is.
There's not.
Yes, there is. This music is very, very, very iconic to me personally. I do not remember. Oh, God, Julio, don't kill me.
Julio's not listening to this episode.
He's probably not. Oh, okay, yeah, duh. This is music by James Horner. So
who's that, Kyle?
Well, James Horner, let's see what other movies he's done. He's done a few things. Well, he did Avatar, Titanic, and Deep Impact.
So this guy likes working with James Cameron.
He does like working with, he's worked with James Cameron quite a bit, but, no, this, he's one of the big
Cameron's go-to.
He's Cameron's go-to, but yeah, he did the soundtrack for Jumanji.
The original Jumanji?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's James Horner. He's also the composer of Land Before Time, if you want another, like, good one. But anyway, it's some good military marches, good intense, like, he uses I don't know what instrument that is. I think it might just be, like, he uses drumsticks by themselves a lot, where it's like he just clacks them together, like it's like a little, like, really, really quick, but it's not like on a snare drum or anything like that. It's just like a click click, like two wooden pieces going together. I don't know, he uses it like every single song in this movie.
Could just be some caracas,
maybe. I don't know, because it's just a very sharp, like two pieces of wood being
those little
together.
Things that people wear on their fingers and they clack them together.
I don't know. Who knows?
It's just one of those like kids slapper things with the two hands that slap when you shake it.
That's a possibility.
You got to get creative in the music business.
Yeah. But anyway,
would you say that this music and this soundtrack much better than the original Alien? I feel like the original Alien had just a lot of ambient noise.
Exactly.
It didn't really have music. It was just eerie ambient sounds that were there to make you feel uncomfortable.
And that's what I was going to say is like, I think that they're two different things. Just like the two different movies are very different. Like,
wow, the two different movies are different.
I mean, but you know what I'm saying. Like, one's a horror movie, yeah. One's a sci-fi action. Like, they're very different. Like, and I think the ambient music works for Alien, but if you'd done that same kind of soundtrack for this movie, it would have been really weird and probably kind of taken you out of the moments. Because there's never really a moment of, like, alien horror in this one, I would say. I mean, there's some jump, like the alien jumping out of the wall to grab the Marine the first time and stuff like that. But there's not a lot of like sneaky horror like in the first movie.
Just a sneaky guy doing his weird slow hand walk.
I mean, that's pretty much the entirety of the first movie, to be fair. Not that I hate the first movie. I like the first movie.
The first movie is really funny if you rewatch it. Like knowing where all the jumps are, yeah. and you just like you're like, let's see how many times I can figure out it's just a dude in a suit walking all weird.
Yep. Yeah,
you know
that's
what? That guy would have made a really good Slender Man.
I mean, going back to like what we were saying about special effects, real quick before we move on to final thoughts, that is definitely a thing with the special effects for the aliens is they never really made them like walk. Like anytime you see them, they're either like jumping like out of a wall or they're like, there's the one scene when they're attacking the med bay where they're like hopping onto tables and stuff, but you never see them like actually walk. Like you never even see them upright. I think the only time you actually really see them doing anything upright is when it grabs Newt.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only time you really see anything that
grabs her in the water. Yep.
So that's probably why he did it like that, because he thought maybe these suits look stupid if they're just kind of standing up.
They
like that.
Look real dumb if it's just a dude in the suit standing there and striding around. I'm not going to lie.
But anyway, we're at final thoughts.
I think we've been pretty clear on our thoughts on this movie. There's
just summarize real quick.
Very little to hate other than the lack of Cat. Lack of Cat makes this movie a little not worth it. If you are listening to my side podcast, Does the Cat Die? We don't know. We don't know if the cat dies. That's very unfortunate for me because, you know me, all about that cat living till the end of the movie. Creatures, great. Story, great. You know, characters, they're all right, I guess. There's just, Sigourney Weaver's in this movie. If you haven't seen it yet, watch it for her. Her parents named her Sigourney. What does that even mean?
Once again, like we haven't been subtle about loving this movie, but
it's a good movie.
But I will say a couple things. So one of the my stories here is that I watched this before I watched Alien.
Ooh, shame on you.
Funniest thing about that is honestly, I didn't even like. I don't know. Maybe it's because I was a kid. Like I saw this movie when I was like seven, but like I don't remember ever being like, what happened before this? I just liked it for what it was and loved it. I didn't see Alien until years later. I think this is going to hurt me a little bit, but I think the first...
No, don't lose your nerd cred.
I'm going to lose it a little bit. I think the first time I actually saw Alien was before the Alien Quadrilogy got released, or right when the Alien Quadrilogy got released. The first big old DVD set of Alien, or the Alien set. And I saw the first Alien, the director's cut, I think was the first version I saw. And I saw it in theaters when it released in theaters, when they released the director's cut in theaters. It was like 2002-ish.
Oh my.
I mean, keep in mind, I was still like, that was like, what, 13, 14?
I saw the original Alien when I was like 8 years old.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure I watched it with my mom. just on TV or something like that. She was like, no, you have to watch this because this is a good movie.
But what's funny is like I had seen Aliens, I had seen Alien Resurrection, I had seen Alien 3, but I just didn't ever see Alien, and I don't remember why, or maybe I did and I just don't remember. But anyway, my point is with the story, if you haven't watched this movie, watch it. Like there's not even any like caveats like of who it's for. No, this just watch this movie. It's a cinematic classic. It's got Sigourney Weaver in it. It's got great action. It's got, in my opinion, great characters that you don't necessarily fall in love with them, but like they're the stereotypes that you love to see.
Do you think I can convince Katya to show this in her film theory class next semester?
You should try.
I'm just going to send her just a very strongly worded email being like, hey, you know, I don't like a lot of movies, Katya, but I know a cinematic masterpiece. Fuck Blade Runner. We're watching Aliens.
But seriously, though, I mean, this movie is pretty much a masterclass at anything it does. It's a masterclass at special effects. It's a masterclass at story. It's a masterclass at cinematography. It's this perfect storm of good. And, like, this is one of those movies why people think James Cameron is the best director of all time, yada, yada, yada. I'm not on that boat because he has made some bad movies, but...
Name one.
I'm not a huge fan of True Lies. Like, I like it, but I'm not a huge fan.
I've never even seen it.
Can't cover it on the podcast. It's Man is the Real Monster, so...
Yeah, Man is the Man is the Real Medium-Sized Monster.
But I don't know. I love this movie. I can watch this movie. It's one of those movies that I can watch, like, maybe not, like, every month, but I can watch it at least once or twice a year and still be okay watching it. I never get bored watching this movie. It's the same way as Jaws for me.
I get bored watching Jaws.
Yeah, well, it's because you don't see the glory that is Jaws. Anyway, I'm not talking about Jaws. But no, I really love this movie. Everything is good about it. Check it out if you haven't. If not, if you have checked it out, rewatch it.
If you haven't checked it out, Jesus, what is, just, can you please, come on, like, seriously?
Also, watch the special edition, don't watch the theatrical cut, please, it's watch, bad, please, it's watch, not bad, it's just, it's alright, but.
Watch the director's cut, yeah. Do yourself a favor and just, if you have the theatrical cut, just throw it away, just burn it, go outside, go to your fire pit, toss it in, light it on fire, walk away, it's gonna crackle, you don't want to be there for that. And just go out and buy yourself the director's cut. It's worth it.
And like I said, at this point, every single Blu-ray /DVD has the special edition on it. So
I'm pretty sure if a movie is over 10 years old, they have to release the full edition. It's in someone's contract.
But anyway, so that was us finally talking about Aliens. I hope you guys enjoyed this 426th episode of Toronto Lives.
I'm really glad that we finally got here. And I'm also glad that on the 426th episode, we did Aliens and mentioned Jaws, because in our very first episode, we did Jaws and mentioned Aliens. And we've come full circle, guys.
But anyway, next week, we have a movie that we missed while it was in theaters.
Yes, we missed the special intermission of The Predator, and I gotta say, super excited for this one.
I've only heard good things, right?
Me too. I mean, like, I've heard that the acting is top-notch. I've heard that the story is gonna blow us away. I don't like to read spoilers, and so I don't. But, like, man, this is what everyone's been telling me, and people know that they can't fucking lie to me.
Yeah, so that's what we're talking about next week, and hope you guys enjoyed this episode of Toronto Lives.
And remember, as I've said numerous times now, the real medium-sized monster is man.
Detonation in T-minus 30 seconds. Three, two, one.
This is Ripley. last survivor of the Nostromo. Signing off.